On today's episode of The Good Word with Goodwill, Eric Spoelstra gets the bag, Kevin Durant is frustrated and deserves to be, and we tell you what NBA games to watch this week. All that and producer John on today's episode of The Good Word.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports, Ball Don't Lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie Network. Get us wherever you get your podcast. It is Wednesday, so it is a solo day. Me and producer John. John, I'm not sure what your favorite college football team is. But if your favorite college football team isn't the University of Michigan, it's because you have an unnatural allegiance to losers.
Thank you for the Cat Williams reference. I needed that to start my day.
Hey, we all need it. We all need it. Everybody, look, if you're seeing me on YouTube, you see the hoodie I got on for the next 360-something days. As one of my best friends likes to say, I'm on a national championship tour. That's what he says. He actually works for U of M. And he was quite ecstatic at the finish of Monday night's game. I was a little more subdued, but very happy inside. But either way, champions, all that good stuff. Now we're moving on to the basketball because that's what we are all here for. There were a couple of surprises on the Twitter machine in the last couple of days. There was the surprise about Ja Morant missing the rest of the regular season following shoulder surgery in practice. 9 games. And you know what? That sigh of relief y'all just heard? That sigh of relief y'all just heard was from the rest of the Western Conference because Ja was going to have that team rolling and one of those teams was going to get knocked out, right? I don't know who it was going to be, but it's a holy trinity of multi-time champions sitting right at the cusp of being knocked out of the play-in. You got the Lakers, you got the Suns, you got Golden State. One of those teams, and granted, Memphis was going to have to play perfect basketball to get there, but they were +7 points per 100 possessions in the minutes that Ja Morant has played. That is indicative of a playoff team, of a real playoff team. That sigh of relief y'all just heard was a bunch of teams saying, man, we ain't got to worry about them till next year. That's what that was. Ja has a lot of questions he has to answer in a bunch of different ways. And of course, we're going to have to see consistency and how he behaves himself. And hopefully nothing else comes out about him while he's out. Hopefully he's not one of these people that actually needs basketball to keep himself on a straight and narrow. Like, hopefully he can just focus on rehab and not deal with lawsuits and all the extra nonsense. But it was going to be really fascinating to see if Memphis could play perfect down the stretch of the regular season. Because I saw that first game where they played against New Orleans and they looked like they were ready to start running. What you got, John?
I'm just going to say this because we talked about this very briefly on Divine Intervention yesterday.
Okay.
And they brought up a good point that I just want to make sure gets said here as well. I think there's also a sigh of relief coming from the Memphis Grizzlies front office because instead of playing the rest of this season with one arm tied behind their back because no Steven Adams, no Brandon Clark, you dug yourself a hole while Ja was on suspension. Like you said, they would have had to be perfect basically to get into the playoffs. Now they can just take this season and be like, all right, we're probably going to end up in the draft lottery. We don't have to trade for anyone or add anything. We don't have to give up any of the assets we currently have. We're going to get a nice little asset in a lottery pick. And next year, we can go full bore with all of these guys healthy, plus a top, 10, top 8 pick, something like that. I think that is a much better scenario for the Memphis Grizzlies' long-term future, the next, the rest of Ja Morant's tenure in Memphis, than it would have been had he stayed healthy and they had played really well the rest of the season.
Well, I think a bigger thing, and I think that's a great point that the guys on Divine Intervention made yesterday. I think the bigger point is that Ja Morant has to show he can actually stay healthy. Like the suspension and the troubles kind of obscured the fact that he's missed huge chunks of the season the last 3 years when Memphis has really elevated itself to top level playoff contention, where to, not to the point that you can't depend on him from a basketball standpoint, because we know you couldn't depend on him from the other stuff. But it's to the point where, do you have to go out and get reinforcements in the offseason? Will these injuries start to add up to where you're looking at that prime and you're saying, Ja Morant at his size, he's not a big dude. He's bigger than Allen Iverson. He's bigger than Isaiah Thomas. And those are the comps that I'm going to bring up for sake of little guys who played in traffic, who had injuries that caught up with them, and it caused early retirements as we know it in today's game. And Ja Morant is nowhere near the age of 30, but I'm just simply saying from the standpoint of how you build your team around a guy like that, you have to be careful. You have to know that there's a level of durability so that you can build your team for something that will be a sustainable program, especially in Memphis, especially in a luxury tax apron world where, luckily for the Memphis Grizzlies, Ja Morant doesn't make super max contract money because, you know, he liked to play with guns last year and tell us all about it. But as a whole, it's going to be a very critical rest of the season and off season, I think, for the Grizzlies. Of course, you got Jackson Jr. and Desmond Bane. They're still going to continue to grow, and they're locked in contract, so you don't have to worry about that. Marcus Smart is still the vet there, and now you got opportunities for other players. Wow, Brandon Clark doesn't have to rush back from that Achilles. Wow, Steven Adams at, you know, getting older, getting up there, you got to figure out where he's going to fit moving forward. So there's a lot of questions still about the present and the present future of the Memphis Grizzlies. Now on to more things, more fun things, rather. So, John, were you paying attention to the Twitter machine when it was announced that Eric Spoelstra had agreed to a contract extension with the Miami Heat? Did you see that?
I did see that. I try to stay off Twitter, but I did see it. I saw it pretty quickly.
Or X, the app formerly known as Twitter.
I don't even do that. I try and stay off both.
There we go. I wasn't shocked at the numbers. Okay, let me just let's back this up for people who don't know. He agreed to an extension, 8 years, $120 million, which basically says to me, for Spo, when I get finished coaching, or when Pat Riley, who's getting up there in age, when Pat Riley is done being the official godfather, I'm going to be the godfather. I'm going to be running this entire operation, which he has completely earned. I said it last week when we had Jerry Greenberg on. Or not say last week. I said it, it was on Monday when we had Jerry Greenberg on. Best coach in basketball. I think the line at best coaches in the NBA starts with Eric Spoelstra. It goes to Ty Lue. And then everybody else can sort of get in line and form a line behind those guys. I think that's where it goes. Steve Kerr has the pedigree and the championship rings, but just talking about from a guy who can take his and beat yours and take yours and beat his, that's Spo. That's the Miami Heat. Like, you think about the championships with LeBron, and he won two out of those 4 years, and there were questions. Remember, John, do you remember when there were questions in the first year of the LeBron, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, big three about, hey man, maybe Coach Pat should come down and give us these 3-hour practices and all this other type of stuff because LeBron didn't actually know what he was getting himself into because they had doubts about Eric Spoelstra. Do you remember that?
I remember two stories from that specifically. I remember LeBron shoulder checking Spoelstra, walking to the sideline, and that being a big deal. And then I saw a story 6-12 months ago, Dwayne Wade talking about those times where he said LeBron literally came to him, or maybe there was a players only meeting, and said, we got to get this guy out. We got to get Riley in here. And Dwayne Wade grabbed LeBron and was like, I played for Riley. You don't want that. It's not going to be better. It's going to be much, much harder. You don't want that.
This ain't what you want. Riles ain't what you want. Them 3-hour practices, dead legs and all that, that wasn't what you wanted. Now, if there's a guy and people who've seen me on here in various platforms, you might know what I'm about to say. Coach Spo is probably the one coach in those coaches' meetings around the league that is probably saying, hey, y'all, can we go back to these suits? Can we go back to looking like adults? Because Coach Spo, had the definite Michael Corleone look going on. Black suit, black tie, Armani'd out. I don't think he's loving the whole, you know, wearing sweatpants and a quarter zip. Or in Miami, probably wearing a polo shirt because it's 85 degrees outside. I'm sure Spo probably wants to, hey, let's look like adults here. But guess what? That man is the adult in the room, okay? He's been there since 97, six trips to the finals. They've been to the Eastern Conference Finals three out of the last 4 years, been to the finals two of those years. And quietly, of course, quietly, y'all, they're still kind of lurking. Like, we pay so much attention to Milwaukee and Boston. Of course, we're going to get to them a little bit later in a later segment. But Miami is still the team that none of those dudes want to face. And I don't know how you feel about, quote unquote, coaches in the NBA, because it kind of feels like a little bit on the homogenous side, John. But you can make a case, in my opinion, you can make a case to fire most of the coaches in the league. It wouldn't be a good case, but you could make a case. You could squint your eyes and say, you know what, Steve Kerr, it's time. You can make the case and say, you know what, Greg Popovich, we just paid you, but it's time for you to step up and be the godfather. It wouldn't be smart cases. It wouldn't be the right move. The one guy you can't make a case on is probably two guys. You can't make a case on Michael Malone, and you can't make a case on Eric Spoelstra. There's a few others, but you get my drift on that. And the Heat are such a model of consistency, a model for this is who we are. We have an identity. This is what we stand for. This is how we're going to play. And I don't know how many other teams actually have that.
Okay, so this is the angle I want to take on this.
Okay.
This is more proof that the Miami Heat are the best organization in the NBA. And maybe the best organization in sports, but definitely the best organization in the NBA. Mickey Aronson was part of the group that brought the Heat to Miami as an expansion team. He still owns the team.
Mm-hmm.
He hires Pat Riley pretty shortly thereafter. When Pat Riley's done coaching, he's like, hey, I want out. Cool. You can go upstairs. You get an easier job, but we still want you here. We still want you on our team, and we're going to empower you to build the team that you know is good. Spo started in the video room with them.
Yep. Yep.
Worked his way up to assistant coach, worked his way up to head coach. And as you said, he'll probably graduate to be the godfather of the team. They just went through this whole thing. Udonis Haslam, he played hard for them when he could. Then he became a bench player. When he couldn't be a bench player anymore, what is he now? An assistant coach, an executive of some sort in there?
He's something.
The Miami Heat operate the way that other teams pretend to operate. They operate like a family. If you're good to them, they will be good to you. There's none of this like, oh, I don't know, there's another coach out there who might be able to. No, you're their guy. And they like their guys. They reward their guys. They keep their guys in-house for as long as their guys want to be a part of the National Basketball Association. And if more teams operated like that, I think it would be better for the league.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's small caveats to that. But wholly, I agree with what you're saying, because Dwayne Wade, the greatest Miami Heat player of all time, is an executive for the Utah Jazz. But even just going back, like, quick history lesson. I don't know if you guys remember the Patrick Ewing finger roll that wasn't the finger roll, and it bounced off the rim, and the Indiana Pacers beat the New York Knicks in game 7 of the 95 Eastern Conference semis. It was the last Knicks good team. Riley walked off the court. Later, maybe a few months later, can't remember exactly when, Mickey Arison comes a-calling. He leaves. He gets part ownership of the team. He becomes vice president and the coach, which is what John was just referring to. So he's able to build a team in his own image. Spo was from the video room, and starting in 97, works his way up assistant coach. He was Dwayne Wade's assistant coach, the guy that works him up before games and everything else. Works his way up. There's the Stan Van Gundy era that was there, and then Pat comes back down, wins a championship in 06, and then in 09, there's Spo again, or 08 rather, going into 09. Spo takes over as head coach, and he's been there ever since, and that is going to continue for the foreseeable future. And I would not count these guys out. I know everybody's looking at the New York Knicks because they got OG Anunoby. They're 5-0 with them, and the numbers look really, really good. The Boston Celtics, of course, look really, really good. The Milwaukee Bucks are really, really explosive. But the Heat also have trade chips. They also have Kyle Lowry's expiring contract. Jimmy Butler hasn't played a lot. He's been dealing with this, I think it's a toe injury, but Jimmy Butler doesn't care about All-Star and postseason awards and all this other type of stuff. He's going to be there when it counts. They have a little bit of flexibility to mess around with. And even though Harrison has traditionally not liked going in the luxury tax, I think by and large, if he sees with this team, there's another chance to make it to the finals and actually win it this time and not just be the little engine that could, but be a powerhouse that gets there again. I don't doubt that the Heat will be in the conversation. You know who could use that level of structure, John, who could use that level of organization, of ethos, of identity? Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant would probably really benefit. And remember, the Miami Heat was on the short list of teams when he issued his first trade demand from the Brooklyn Nets before he rescinded it and played for the Nets again, you know, for the early part of last season before eventually being moved to Phoenix. Miami was on that list. And KD came out yesterday, I believe, and spoke to Fox Sports' Melissa Rowland, who does great work for them. And he talked about his quote-unquote frustration and says, I don't want to get traded. And he says, nobody ever wants to call me great. That's a bit hyperbolic, but I think I get what he's saying, but Kevin Durant is undeniably great. That's a bit melodramatic, but I understand his overall sort of sentiments. He says, they want to call me these other words, insecure, miserable, bad teammate. That's what's going to get these people paid for the articles that they write. Take slight umbrage with that because KD's more talking about the people on TV more than he's talking about the actual writers. He's talking about what he's seeing on the ESPNs and the FS1s and, you know, some of the talk shows that will always go to him and use fodder. KD is not the guy that wants to have his name all in the videos. He's not the guy that wants to be a topic of discussion for all the other things outside of the game when just using the game sort of as a linchpin for discussion. Like, he's not that level of narcissist in that way. And it got me to thinking, John, because the Draymond Green situation has, of course, popped up. Draymond is coming, returning to Golden State. He's doing a ramp up. It was his first day of practice. He talked to the media yesterday. And of course, he also spoke on his podcast, the Draymond Green Show, a couple days before that. I believe it was on Monday. And he spoke about Stephen A. Smith saying that, or believing that Stephen A. Smith spoke about saying that Stephen Curry was going to catch hell because of Draymond Green's actions. And Stephen A.'s point was that if it were on LeBron James's team, that LeBron would catch hell for something that his teammates are doing. And I just think that argument as a whole, and there's a way that I'm going to try to weave all this together, but LeBron doesn't mind the conversation, even if it's unfair, even if it's only sort of tacitly tied to him. He doesn't mind the conversation because he doesn't mind being talked about as a whole. That's just not something that he's worried about, that he thinks about. He kind of craves it. You kind of get the feeling that, you know, like when he put out that tweet about Spo, his former coach, and then he talked about Ty Lue, the former, you know, his former coach in Cleveland, while his current coach, Darvin Ham, is being a little embattled, and you're talking about your ex-girlfriend, saying how good your ex-girlfriend looks. Yeah, it's going to spark a level of conversation. Kevin Durant ain't that dude. He's not the guy that wants to have all these discussions around him. We do a lot of projection on KD because he only says so much. We do a little bit less of projection on Stephen Curry. We do a lot more of pity on Steph than we do with KD. Because KD has moved around so much through his career, we tend to overanalyze the most minute of things. John, I remember getting a text message like right after initially some of the stuff started coming out. I think maybe Stephen A. had said something, or maybe it was around Christmas, and they were talking about, you know, Kevin Durant's frustrations. And someone shot me a text and said, oh, I've seen this before. KD spent a lot of time standing in the corner yesterday, and his shoulders were slumped. And I felt so bad in that moment, because even throughout the course of a game, he can't have a moment where he stands in the corner or he's a little bit frustrated in like the minute. Like, he can't be frustrated with, hey, we're down 15 and we're not coming back this game, and I'm playing a lot of minutes. The most minutes that he's played, with the exception of 1 year in Brooklyn, the most minutes he's played since his MVP season in 2014. He's carrying a huge load for this Phoenix Suns team, averaging 36-6, y'all, on a 53-47-88 splits. He's never shot that well from three. He's always been an uber efficient offensive player, and he's shooting extraordinarily well from three. And Devin Booker is carrying more of a load because Bradley Beal is giving himself up there and wrapping himself up there. And we're so psychoanalyzing him. We're super psychoanalyzing the shoulder slumps of him standing in the corner, and we're treating him like he wants to be talked about this way when he doesn't want to be talked about it this way.
It's because we don't understand him. Like, this is the thing. I think everything Kevin Durant has said in that article and about himself, defending himself over the years, is 100% correct. Like, Kevin Durant, in my mind, is deserves to be in all of the conversations with LeBron James as the one of the greatest basketball players who's ever played, one of the greatest basketball players of this generation. I mean, we saw him go toe-to-toe with LeBron in the finals and be the better player multiple times.
And we give him no credit for it.
And we give him no credit for it. And I think it's because, and this is the Jordan Nike effect, like 30 years later, in that we took this great basketball player, Michael Jordan, and then we had to commoditize him, right? We had to turn him into commercials and taglines and a logo. He had to star in a movie. We had to get to learn who he was away from the court. And then we didn't like that. And then he disappeared and played baseball. And then he came back and he was it. And like, LeBron has played into all of that. When LeBron is making videos of him and his family sitting around the table and he's yelling Taco Tuesday, that's because that's what we as an audience crave. Oh, he's a family man. He loves his wife. He loves his kids. This is what LeBron's legacy is going to be, as if you need an off-court legacy. And Durant is sitting here going, I don't need an off-court legacy. I'm here to play basketball. You pay me to play basketball. Like, just compare everyone as basketball players and don't worry about the fact that I'm not married. I don't have kids. And here's the other thing, and Vinny, you know this well. KD is getting lumped in with his friends, and it's unfair. Like, how many times has James Harden demanded a trade? Three?
Yes. That sounds about right.
How many times has Kyrie demanded a trade? Twice?
At least.
So yes. Those are the guys that were like, oh, I've heard this story before. Here comes the trade demand. KD has asked for, requested one trade. Once. We got mad at him for leaving OKC and going to Golden State. That's what free agency is there for, to give people that choice. People got mad at him for leaving Golden State and going to Brooklyn. That's what free agency is there for.
I'll take it a step further. When you look at Kevin Durant in the macro, and you're not zooming in, you're saying, man, great player that has played for so many different teams, you know, four teams or whatever it is. I think that's going to become a lot more common than you think, you know, as we move into a next generation of players. But when you zoom in a little bit, we can zoom in. There's justification for every one of those individual moves. If he didn't want to live in Oklahoma City anymore, and Oklahoma City people got on me a little bit when I was on another show, and I said, you know, I didn't want to spend June in Oklahoma City, like I'd never been there before. I'm like, no, Oklahoma City's a cool place, but it's not San Francisco, it's not LA, like it's not. I get it, y'all. But if Kevin Durant says, hey, I spent the first 7-8 years of my career here, and I want to go somewhere different, like you said, that's his right. And if I don't think we can win a championship here with these players next to me, and I'm going to ultimately be held accountable for it. Let me change how I'm held to account. So then he goes to Golden State and wins championships that we give him zero credit for. Zero credit for. And, oh, I'm sorry, Draymond Green made a mess of that. Maybe he was on his way out anyway, right? And you could say that given Kevin Durant's history, that perhaps he was going to leave because that was never going to be his team. If that was never going to be your team, and you're never going to actually get credit for being a better player than LeBron James in multiple NBA Finals series, if all you had to hear about after both of your Finals MVPs was how unfair it was that it was you that tilted the axes of everything in the NBA, yeah, that would kind of make it a little of an unhappy situation for you. Okay, you go to Brooklyn. I may quibble with you choosing Kyrie Irving as a running mate. I may also quibble with you choosing the Brooklyn Nets over the New York Knicks, because if you're going to go to New York, you go to New York. You go to New York. Like, you don't go off Broadway. You go to Broadway, y'all. I get it. But given that the Knicks are, given that the Knicks have been the less than model organization that they've been for 50 damn years, I get why he wouldn't have wanted to choose there. So let's go there, right? Kyrie Irving doesn't want to take the vaccine. James Harden checks out. Why would he want to stay there, right?
This is my thing. And I feel like this is a decent way of summing this up. I watched Dirk Nowitzki's like entire career as a Dallas Mavericks fan. And there were times where the team was bad and they were like, hey, Dirk, we can ship you off somewhere else. We can trade you somewhere else. And Dirk was like, no, it's really important to me to be on one team my entire career. He wanted that because Dirk wanted a statue in front of the building and he got it. And Kobe has talked about there was a time where Kobe almost went to the Clippers. And then he was like, no, you know, it's important for me to play my career with the Lakers. And he's going to get a statue in front of the building. LeBron cares about having a statue in front of the building. KD does not care about the statue in front of the building. I'd go so far as to say KD doesn't care about the fans. He's not there for the adulation, the admiration. He's there to play basketball.
I think he wants that.
I think he wants the TV and the radio and the podcast and the writers to talk more about basketball and less about the things that aren't basketball. And I think he's annoyed that what fans go for, what fans crave, is the not basketball stuff a lot of the time.
Well, unfortunately, we don't have the metrics to know if it's the chicken or the egg. Do you produce programming that is basketball adjacent compared to basketball because that's what the audience is clamoring for? Or is the audience clamoring for basketball adjacent stuff because that's all they've been given? And that is a lifelong question that, honestly, not to get way too deep into the weeds here, I think will be answered largely in this next TV deal, because there's going to be a diversity of partners and perhaps a diversity of content where you're not just going to be wholly dependent on one person to set one entity, rather, to set the basketball agenda. But to KD, here's another quote, here, just speaking to what we were just talking about. And this is to Melissa Rowland from Fox Sports. Why are you continuously trying to create drama around my name for no reason? Why are you trying to make my life miserable? That's the question. There's no need. Let's just talk about what I see on the basketball court, because the fan base wants to know how I'm thinking as a basketball player. As someone who knows KD a little bit, I don't pretend to know KD a lot, but I feel like I got a good beat on him. We have a really good rapport. I think he's a really good dude. If he is frustrated, John, he has every damn right to be, okay? Because he's paired with Devin Booker and Bradley Beal, and Bradley Beal has a bad back. And then in his first game back, after recovering from said bad back, he gets his ankle run under and misses more time. You know how many minutes Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, and Bradley Beal have played together, y'all? I had to look this up because I wasn't sure about it myself until this morning. 108 minutes together as a group. And once again, I just told you, KD plays 37 minutes a night. Devin Booker playing 36 minutes a night. Bradley Beal's supposed to be there, not playing those amount of minutes because those two aren't supposed to play that amount of minutes, but they're supposed to play a bulk of their minutes together to start the game and to finish the game. You're supposed to be the most potent offensive group in basketball. And because that group has not been able to play together, they are plus 23 when they're out there, right? That's a pretty decent number, but not excellent, not great. That's just a three-man unit of those three, and they got to figure some other things out. They're a 500 team, and KD's playing career basketball at 35 years old. We talk about LeBron playing, you know, look, finding the fountain of youth and everything else. KD is playing excellent basketball, and it's not having an effect on winning. We talked about this last week with Marcus Thompson about Stephen Curry and about LeBron and about KD. But specific to KD, another team that he's on where he can't realize the full potential of everything that's happening. Now, granted, it's going to be really hard for Phoenix to find the ancillary parts around those three guys because they take up so much salary cap space. And that's the deal you make with the devil when you bring in Bradley Beal on a Supermax. But you want to have the opportunity to see it through. And if you're a 500 team right now, you damn right I'd be frustrated. What's wrong with being frustrated? If Kevin Durant wasn't frustrated, do you know what we would be saying as a basketball media? Ah, man, he don't want to win. He just want to sit with his boys and collect his money and shoot and score. Like, there is no winning for him in this. He should be frustrated. He has expectations. They lost in six games to Denver in the second round last year. I'm going to tell y'all a little secret. They might have gotten popped in the first round if Kawhi Leonard hadn't gotten hurt in game two of the Western Conference, that first round series with them. So, yeah, he knows his clock is ticking. He wants to win again. He wants to win a championship outside of Golden State. Hell, yeah, he should be frustrated. And have you seen the Phoenix Suns play? They don't look like a cohesive unit. And it's not just because of the injuries. It looks like it's a group of guys playing playground basketball. My turn, your turn, your turn, my turn. There's not a whole lot of structure. There isn't an on-floor ethos. And you can say what you want about Kevin Durant. He knows what winning looks like. He knows what a contender looks like. So if he's frustrated and we're psychoanalyzing his frustration, I say, yeah, let's psychoanalyze the frustration because that means there's a guy that wants to get better. But before we get out of here, John, today's Wednesday. So we got a slate of games tonight. And as you guys know, Jared Greenberg hosts NBA Crunch Time on the NBA app from 8:30 on. Like, go check that out. So not just on today's games, but just games for the rest of the week, John. What game jumps out to you? You tell me one, I'll give you one that really jumps out to me.
I got a bunch of them. I got one tonight. I got one tomorrow. I got one Friday.
All right.
We'll see how many we'll go one for one. We'll see how many you got too, because some of these we might match. The first one I'm really excited about, and this is kind of tacking onto a conversation that we had on Divine Intervention yesterday about the New Orleans Pelicans, who are playing really well since the in-season tournament, seem to be finding their chemistry with their guys healthy on the court. Pelicans are playing the Nuggets in Denver on Friday. The last time these teams played was mid-November. I believe the Pelicans won that game. It was a close game in the fourth quarter, and the Pelicans found a way. And that was before they had everyone healthy. Jamal Murray wasn't playing, but that was before the Pelicans had everyone healthy and they started building this chemistry and everything. So this is going to be a really, really good test for a young team that has not faced a lot of tests yet. And if the Pelicans can hang with them, if the Pelicans can beat the Nuggets in Denver, that's going to make them feel a lot better about their chance to compete once playoff time comes around.
I don't think they'll lack confidence in a playoff setting, because I don't think a team with Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson have like the super ups and super low, you know, super ups and super downs. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, not, but they got to prove to themselves that late. And this is what the thing in November kind of did for them a little bit, was prove like, hey, if it's a late crunch time, you know, it's within five minutes left, and they have Jokic, we still stand a chance. Because we've seen other teams that math problem doesn't add up very well for them.
That math problem don't add up well for nobody. Okay, let's keep that perfectly honest. Like that fat man is running the NBA until further notice. Okay, there's just no answer for him. And if you find an answer, please let me know. The game that intrigues me revolves around a team that we kind of sort of talk about and a team that we've definitely talked about. Tomorrow, if you're hearing this on Wednesday, tomorrow, the early TNT game, Milwaukee and Boston. For a number of reasons, Milwaukee was getting their doors blown off by the Utah Jazz the other night. Doors blown off. And we all know about Adrian Griffin having to adjust with Giannis, with Chris Middleton, with Damian Lillard. Like, it's still a big-time adjustment. The guys over there don't seem to be but so concerned about as a whole. You know, they're saying, hey, if we're going to do something different, we don't want to go to the playoffs and get our doors blown off like we have the past, you know, four out of the last 5 years, with the exception of winning the championship, because we had great regular seasons and couldn't sustain it in the playoffs. True. But you do want to build habits in the regular season that you can fall back on in the playoffs as positive reinforcement. You know what a deal of positive reinforcement would be, John? Beating the Boston Celtics at the crib on a nationally televised game in front of the world when the Celtics are arguably the best team in basketball and at the very least the best team in your conference. That is a dynamite game that I will be sitting up to make. That will be appointment viewing. If I were partaking in spirits this month, I'd have a nice bourbon that night. I'm not having a nice bourbon that night, but I will be partaking in that game. What's your next one?
I'm glad to see we're both doing dryware together.
Yeah, there we go. Sir.
We'll clink glasses over a video camera on February 1st. My last game actually ties into that game, because I was going to mention Bucks Celtics, because obviously that's the game that everyone's been waiting for since the Dame trade happened, right? Mm-hmm. Since the Drew Holiday mm-hmm. trade happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tonight is a game that in theory should be just as fun.
They've played before, mind you. They played before already.
They did. But we're still waiting for those matchups, right? You can learn a little bit from each one of those matchups.
Every one of them, absolutely.
The Celtics, the number one team in the East, tonight play the Minnesota Timberwolves, the number one team in the West. Normally, this would be a game that we would be really, really excited about. There's a couple reasons why it's less exciting. Number one, the Celtics know they play the Bucks on national TV tomorrow, so they may not go all out to try and win this game against the Timberwolves. Number two, the Celtics are 17-0 at home. Like, that's a big advantage. So if they come away with a win against the Timberwolves, everyone's going to be like, well, they're just dominant at home. That's just what happens. If they lose to the Timberwolves, everyone's going to say, well, they're just saving themselves for the Bucks tomorrow. So it's not super exciting, but I'm still going to be watching how the Timberwolves try and deal with the Celtics defense, which is really spread out. And the Timberwolves like to clog the paint with all their big guys. And I'm going to be interested to see how the Timberwolves try and score against the Boston Celtics, because Ant can't do it all by himself.
No, but see, do you remember this? Do you remember the first game that they played against each other in Minnesota? I believe it was one of those in-season tournament, games where it went to overtime and the Ant-Man locked up Jason Tatum. And it was one of those coming out games for the Ant-Man. It was one of those games where the Ant-Man announced to the world, I'm here, I'm locking up who many people believe can be the best player on a championship team, could be the best player on a championship team this year, and I took his cookies. Jason Tatum is incredibly competitive. Jason Tatum is not like the guy that you think that you can steal on and he ain't going to try to get his get back. That man going to try to get his lick back. And I have no problem with the individual matchups that you're going to see tomorrow and tonight. And if the Boston Celtics are center stage, I'll tell you this. Usually, John, I cover the Western Conference in the playoffs, and that probably won't change this year. Maybe I'll petition a little bit, but a playoff game in the Boston Garden, I know it's not the old Garden, right? The old Garden was a place that I feared. I was a Pistons fan, right? You know, you heard about the dead spots in the Garden and, oh, Bird steals the ball. No. Oh, my God. If I hear Bird steals the ball one more goddamn time in my life, it will be too many. I know I'm going to hear it a million more times because we can't seem to erase the footage of the Celtics from back then. Can't find any footage of the Bad Boys besides them beating people up. But that's an argument for another day. All right, cool. But to the point, going to a finals game in Boston, electric. Like, don't get me wrong. Those fans are vulgar, they're mean, and in some cases, they are racist as hell. But it is an amazing atmosphere to watch a high-stakes playoff or finals game. And if they go through the regular season with, you know, three or four losses at home, baby, that's going to be a tough place to, it's already going to be a tough place to play. But if you go 37-4 at home during the regular season, that adds the mystique to a place that's going to be really, really hard to win games at when you don't have home court advantage. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is today's show. That's all we've got for you today. Thanks to producer John and everybody else who works hard behind the scenes. Jake and Dan will be back for another episode of No Cap Room tomorrow. I will be back on Monday to talk Little Hoops and to celebrate the life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Until then, everybody be safe. Hey, y'all, what y'all gonna do about these Detroit Rams this weekend?